You're listening to The Drew Marshall Show, Canada's most listened to spiritual talkback program.
All right, folks, moving along. Thanks for tuning in. We are live here in the GTA on Joy 1250 and streaming live at drewmarshall.ca. We've got kind of a long intro to this next guest, but I want to go through it because it sets it up perfectly. I typically don't rattle on too much. Well, who am I kidding? Yes, I do. But I usually don't go through someone's bio this much. Alain de Botton. I think I'm pronouncing that correctly. Tim, do I get a head nod on that one?
Yes, okay, you do.
Thank you very much.
Unless, of course, he comes on and says no.
No. He'd say no. Was brought up in a committed atheistic household, and though he was powerfully swayed by his parents' views, he underwent in his mid-20s a crisis of faithlessness. Think that one through. His feelings of doubt about atheism had their origins in listening to Bach's cantatas, were further developed in the presence of certain Bellini Madonnas, and became overwhelming with an introduction to Zen architecture. However, it was not until his father's death, buried under a Hebrew headstone in a Jewish cemetery because he had intriguingly omitted to make more secular arrangements, got to find out about that one, that Alain began to face the full degree of his ambivalence regarding the views of religion that he had dutifully accepted. You know what I'm realizing, Tim, as I'm reading this? If
yes.
I continue to go through this, we won't need to interview him.
No.
This is letting the cat out of the bag a little too much. Alain, thank you so much for joining us all the way from, where are you, in England somewhere, I think?
Absolutely, in London, England, full of the Queen's Jubilee fever.
Right.
And, absolutely.
What does the Queen's Jubilee fever look like? Are there trinkets being sold, more teacups than ever, and spoons? And
that's right, all of that, and a general feeling that we should all be happy, which I think we are, really, but a big sense of celebration.
Okay, I didn't grow up in an atheistic household. What does that look like?
An atheistic household is one where you get told from an early age that people who believe in religion are a little bit stupid. They haven't quite seen the light. They don't believe enough in the truths of science. They're a bit soft-headed. They believe in Jesus, Santa Claus, these kinds of things. They're naive. Hmm. They're a bit childlike. And the atmosphere in my family was, look, we're better than this. We believe in science, and science has brought us, science has put men on the moon, and it's making, microwave ovens and jet planes, and we can look forward with confidence to the future without the darkness of religion.
So you, much like many, I'd say, Republican Christian, evangelical fundamentalists in the South, grew up with parents that skewed them and fed them with bias and bigotry. In other words, your parents, fed a bias and a bigotry.
Yeah. Yes, I would say so. I mean, it's odd, isn't it? Because we tend to think that bigotry comes just from the religious.
Yes.
But it doesn't. I mean, there's all kinds of bigotry. Look, I have a very respectful relationship with my parents, and they were not, in general, bigots. But when it came to religion, yes, their attitude was definitely bigoted.
When your father passed, I mean, what was... first of all, who had more of an influence on your life, your mom or your dad?
I think when it set the tone of these kind of things, I think that would be my dad.
Right. So when your dad passed... did that have any impact on figuring this stuff out or refiguring this stuff out?
Well, I think it liberated me to think, so I grew up in my early 20s and thinking, I have to hate religion.
You're right.
That, mention the word religion, we know this is the ridiculous stuff. And then gradually, over my 20s, I kept bumping into things that I thought, even though they were religious, I thought were kind of interesting, whether that was a piece of Christian art or, a Buddhist ritual, or, an Islamic building, whatever it was. And I started to think, and I rather worried myself thinking this, what's going on? It looks like religion can't have been all nonsense. And I know that sounds ridiculous because, why would one ever think that? But that was the crisis that I was going through in my 20s. And then gradually I arrived at a point of thinking, well, of course not. Why should religions be all nonsense? Of course there are bits of them that, as an atheist. And I've never wavered in my non-belief. I've wavered in my attitude to religion. And I think that's an important distinction. You can be an atheist and think religion is ridiculous and you hate it, or you can be an atheist and think that religion has at moments got a lot to contribute. So, you know, it's not about stopping being an atheist. Mm. It's about changing the kind of atheism. That's what happened to me.
So listen, help me understand your father being buried under a Hebrew headstone. What? Explain that story to me, please.
Well, I mean, it was rather weird that he was a committed atheist, and yet when he died, he got buried in a Jewish cemetery because he'd omitted to make any other arrangements, which was in itself kind of symbolic. I think that many people, whatever their feelings of religion, when it comes to marriage and death, they will revert back to religion. Mm. And I think that's intriguing. I think that the secular world, the atheist world, still doesn't quite know how to marry people and bury people, you know. And there's a kind of reversion to millennia-old traditions when it comes to these very fundamental acts.
Okay, so when it comes to really what this book is about, and again, by the way, we're speaking with Alain de Botton. He's the author of Religion for Atheists, A Nonbeliever's Guide to the Uses of Religion. If I could summarize this, and you tell me if I'm completely out in left field on this one. You don't want to throw the baby out with the bathwater, so to speak. You want to take all the good stuff that you think is worthy of transporting over into the atheist camp.
That's right. My argument is that religions are intermittently far too subtle, interesting, complex, beautiful to be abandoned merely to those who happen to actually believe in them. Therefore, all of us, not least non-believers. And this has been a really incendiary point. This book has drawn a lot of heat. It's been published around the world, and it's drawn a lot of heat, and people have said, look, if you're an atheist, you hate religion, and if you love religion, you've got nothing to say against it that could be negative. Hmm. That's the sort of standard party line, but of course, many, many people, and this is why the book has also sold very well, many people don't feel that. Many people think, look, I don't have any belief, but actually, I love the atmosphere of old churches. I love singing together. I love the atmosphere in some of the passages of the Old and New Testament, you know, et cetera, just as some firm believers think something along the lines of, the reason why I love my religion is not really the doctrines, it's not really the supernatural bit. It's because I love to come together with people, and I love the sense of tradition, or I love the sense of ritual, or any of these things. So I think we're kind of confused about what's the nicest bit of religion. And it tends to be thought that the most important thing is, do you believe or not? And I'm kind of arguing in this book that in many ways, this issue of belief or non-belief is not the central one. The central one is some of the secondary bits that go with religion, like community, morality, education, art, architecture, a sense of belonging, that these are the things that actually attract both believers and non-believers to religion.
Okay, so it sounds like you really just want to sort of formalize the club a little more. You want to get the atheist club a little more organized, and then with that organization comes community, and with community comes the need, or the benefit of community comes all these other things. You know, you even want to build a temple. Is there an atheist temple in the world? I'm sure there's got to be an atheist temple somewhere, Alain.
Mm. My starting point is, many of the things that religions get up to have got things to offer, even to the non-religious. If you look at how religions bring people together, create communities, that's very impressive. And we live in a very fractured world, very divided world, mm-hmm. and there are lessons here into how we could get organized. If you look at the way that religions teach morality, there's a bad version of this. You know, you will rot in hell, or you will boil in oil if you don't, you know, follow. But there's a kind of nobler, more evolved thing, which is, we've got to make a moral effort. That being good is something we should try and practice at being better at. We should practice in little ways on a daily basis.
But can't you see the community that you're thinking about, your utopia sort of that you're imagining here? Running into problems when you do get organized and you do, I don't know, have an atheist temple and you have codes and rituals and beautiful things. But along with that, along with community comes becomes people not treating each other. It's not going to be blissful. And then how, you know, what are the dividing lines? You know, who says this is right? Who says this is wrong? How do you, do you have to develop your own moral code within this community?
Yeah, I mean, it may be a bit confusing for listeners because I wrote this book, which is called Religion for Atheists. And it could sound as though what I'm suggesting is that atheists should have their own religion. That's specifically not what I'm saying.
No, yeah, I get that.
No, but let me just explain. So what I'm saying is that non-believers can look at religions and draw a variety of lessons from religions, and all sorts of things in the secular world can go better if non-believers were to pay a little bit more attention to what religions get up to, because there's so many good ideas. So if you're in the business of community building, look at how religions build communities. If you're in the business of education, look at how religions teach, because they teach brilliantly. If you are in the business of art or architecture, look at how religions use art and architecture to make a powerful impact on people's lives. So what I'm doing is not kind of trying to replace religion with something else. I'm simply saying atheists should stop their negative approach whereby they say, I don't believe, so I'm just going to ignore religion altogether. Hmm. And I want to move people towards a thing of saying, look, I don't believe, but I'm going to stick around and listen to a lot of the concepts and theories of religion because they're so interesting. I mean, if you think of something like the concept of original sin, now you could say, what on earth is an atheist going to do with the concept of original sin? Now, in fact, philosophically, that is a beautiful and very accurate, very useful concept, a philosophical concept, which can be separated out from the belief structure from which it emerged. And essentially, it's telling us that human life is imperfectible, that human nature cannot be made perfect, that our imagination, our desires will always outstrip our reason and our best sides. And that's a very useful starting point if you're trying to make politics or you're trying to get into a relationship with someone, et cetera, et cetera. So all I'm saying is religions are rich in good material, and atheists should not turn their back on this. They should learn and take inspiration.
Alain de Botton is the author of Religion for Atheists, A Nonbeliever's Guide to the Uses of Religion. Now, I'm pretty sure you know nothing about me, so let me just paint you a very brief picture of where I'm at spiritually these days. I suck spiritually. Things are not going well for me. I'm having ridiculous amounts of doubts. I'm no longer in the camp of certainty that I was for 30 years, okay? Mm-hmm. So having said that, when my father this week went into hospital, had an open heart surgery, I said to someone in a text, I said, you know, who do I pray to now that I'm no longer 100% certain there's a God? Now, I still did pray to God because I'm, you know, I'm not an atheist. So I maybe slipped into agnostic territory a little bit, but I'm not an atheist. So, but you are an atheist. So just in terms of not even praying, but just thankfulness, you know, who are you thankful to?
Mm. Well, that's really interesting.
Sorry. I need to just clear that up for our listeners. Yeah. What I'm getting, the tie-in in that is, I mean, the concept of thankfulness that the religious communities hunker down into, I'm assuming are one of those things that you would like to say, you know what, we need to learn from that and we need to take that ourselves as well. Mm-hmm. Correct?
Yeah, absolutely. I think you can shift from gratitude, which is thanks to a particular person, to a concept of appreciation, which is noticing and valuing without the concept of a maker. And I think that atheists can appreciate and religious people can feel grateful, and together those two communities can have very, very similar feelings. To appreciate spring and to feel grateful to spring are very close emotions. So again, it's an example of the way that these two communities are not as separate as people might think.
One concept that you're really about in this book is, you know, you want to free our soul-related needs from the influence of religion. And I'll say that again. You want to free our soul-related needs from the influence of religion.
It's not quite that. It's from... Now, first of all, let's just explain what our soul-related needs are. I think the word soul originated before Christianity. It's a word that comes from the Greek. And really what that means is the most inner, precious bit of yourself. If you're a Christian, that means the bit that belongs to God. But if you're not a Christian, it could mean the seat of your, you know, deepest longings, hopes, and your best nature. So you can use the word soul. You know, that's not a bad word for atheists and believers. What I'm simply saying is that we've got all sorts of needs of our soul, for our souls, and I think those needs are for things like goodness, friendship, gratitude, community, all kinds of things,
right.
A feeling of awe. And what do you do with those feelings if you are an atheist? I think too often atheism has kind of suppressed those needs. It's made those needs seem like they don't really exist. Like if you don't believe, surely you have no need for the transcendent,
right.
For a feeling of transcendence. And I'm arguing in this book, of course you do. We all do. Even if you don't think that there is a transcendent being, you still have a need of a feeling of transcendence.
But this is, you're fighting an uphill battle within your own camp on this stuff.
Oh, totally. They hate me more than, you know. The
more than us?
The religious people are
right.
The ones who have been buying this book and reaching out to me.
Right.
The ones who have been going crazy are a certain kind of aggressive, militant atheist. And I think this debate is ridiculous. And I've fought back with the atheists, with these militant atheists. You know, I remember receiving a message from a group of them that said, "You have betrayed atheism." And I wrote back to them going, "Hang on a minute, guys, betrayed atheism? What kind of language is this?"
Very dramatic.
This is not a creed. This is, you know, anyway, so in a way what I'm doing has come to seem really dramatic, even though at another level it's common sense. What I'm saying is you can be an atheist and fully understand so much of the religious experience. You know, I wake up at 3 a.m. and feel that there might be, that I have a wish for a creator who might assure my future, that my fate is in safe hands. Do I believe there's a creator who assures that my fate is in safe hands? No, I don't think there is. But I know the need. I know the longing. And I think it's
Where does that come from?
Well, I think you can have a longing for a God without believing in a God.
Right, but what I'm saying is, if the majority of humans, and I would say, you know, obviously I don't have statistics to back something like this up, but I would venture guess that every human being at some point in their life wishes that there was a all-knowing, all-good, all-perfect creator and that has everything ultimately under control.
Mm. Absolutely.
Right? And so what I'm saying is, if every human being thinks like that, is that not then, you know, you've heard this argument before, you know exactly where I'm going. Is that not some sort of a link towards the possibility that there is a creator if that need is there within everybody?
No.
Oh.
I think the fact that there, I mean, philosophically, you can have a need and a desire without the outcome of that need or desire existing. Take immortality. Almost all of us, don't want to die, right? We all have a need and a desire for immortality. Does it mean that immortality is possible? No, not necessarily. We all have a desire to be rich and famous. Are we all rich and famous? No. So, in other words, you can have a need or desire. You know, I can have a need for a giant creator who assures my future, but I don't necessarily believe that he or she exists. Now, the point is that typically, modern atheism has denied the legitimacy of those needs. It said, if you long for something like this, you are childish and naive, right?
Right.
And I'm trying to say, no, but you're just human. So I'm arguing, let's accept human vulnerability. Let's accept that desire for a creator, for someone who can assure our futures. That doesn't mean you have to believe in it, but let's accept the desire that such a thing would exist. Wouldn't it be lovely? It's just I don't believe in it, but I accept that I would want there to be.
Alain de Botton is the author of Religion for Atheists, A Nonbeliever's Guide to the Uses of Religion, a fascinating read. And I've got to ask you, I'm sure everybody else has done the same thing. If Hitchens was alive today, read this book, what kind of email do you think you'd get from him?
Look, I think he would hate it, because he hated any kind of concession, what he would see as a concession to religion.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, it's never good to speak badly of the dead, but I think to write a book, as he did, with a subtitle, Why Religion Poisons Everything, is just massively exaggerated.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, of course religion poisons some things, but so do lots of things. It's time to move on from that kind of atheism. It's time to move on into a kind of atheism that recognizes the debt that everybody, religious or non-religious, owes to religion.
Ellen, let me just ask you two more questions before we say goodbye. At the School of Life, which is something that you founded, you were one of the founders, correct? Or maybe the founder. It says here, we're curious about what values we should live by today, so we've asked maverick cultural figures to tell us what they see as the virtues to cling to and the vices to be wary of. From kindness and humility to envy and adultery, they deliver persuasive polemics with peculiar passion. Wow. Expect hellfire preaching, an alternative parish newsletter, hymns, sticky buns, conversations with fellow parishioners, and the possible appearance of the devil himself. I'd go to that church.
That's right. Well, I've set up this thing called the School of Life in London, which is not, it's learnt a lot of lessons from some of the things that I think are nicest in religion, like a spirit of community. So every month we get together, we have what we call secular sermons, which is somebody making a case for a virtue, talking about kindness or patience or empathy. And it's a get-together. People meet. And they've become hugely popular in London because people are lonely and people want reminders of being good, because we all do. We all want to be good.
It sounds like a hippie and an atheist married, got together and had a kid.
Yeah, you wouldn't think that if you met me, because I'm very sober in a way. But yeah, look, I mean, I think we've had too much of a narrow view. Either you are, you know, a religious person, but if you're an atheist, you're a materialist, you just want to go shopping, et cetera, et cetera. You know, no, atheists have all the same needs as the religious. They just fulfill them in a different way. And that's what we need to understand, and that's in a way what my book's about.
All right, let's finish with this. You heard me talking about how my faith is sort of teetering a little bit.
Yeah.
What would you say to drag me over to the dark side?
Well, I wouldn't want to drag you to the dark side, but look, all I would say is, whether your faith is there or not, don't worry so much that something irrevocable is going to change. The things that you value about you, the things that other people value about you, probably don't depend on whether you have faith or no faith. If God exists, he's going to see that. So don't get hung up on the question of whether you believe or don't believe. Concentrate on leading a good life, on being good to others and good to yourself. And in a way, let that other question, you know, let the heart decide. Let others decide. Maybe it's not for us to know. That's my advice.
That was a great way to end this interview. Thank you so much, Alain. I really appreciate your time and this book as well.
Thank you so much.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Alain de Botton is the gentleman we were speaking with. He is an author, and he is the author of Religion for Atheists, A Non-Believer's Guide to the Uses of Religion. Well, I think that was a stimulating discussion.
It was. That House of Life thing sounds brilliant. Especially the sticky buns.
sticky buns. A short break on our show.
Like what you've heard? Listen again online at drewmarshall.ca.
Ago. After 5 years of pastoring in Australia, Drew Marshall moved back to Canada and, with absolutely zero broadcasting experience, walked into the studios of Joy 1250 and pitched the idea of hosting a talk show that was different. Canada's most listened to spiritual talk show is now listened to by over 100,000 people around southern Ontario and thousands more by Canadians coast to coast. On September 15, 2012, the Drew Marshall Show will start season 10. And as a thank you for putting up with Drew for 10 years, we've decided to cut all advertising costs by 10%. Doesn't matter which plan you're interested in. 1250 specials, 10% off. One-day advertising package, 10% off. Our summer holiday special, 10% off. Or even our 15-week advertising package is now 10% off. To sign up for one of our 10-year anniversary advertising specials, contact us today at drewmarshall.ca.